If you ever played the game hide and go seek, if you will, just raise your hand. Now, I know some of you, you are not just hide and go seek novices. You've sort of perfected the fine art of hide and go seek. And one of the things you got to learn and kind of get under your belt if you're going to be any good at the game is you need to anticipate not only good hiding places, but the people you're playing with. I remember growing up, and I don't know why I did not learn, but my dad, when we would play hide and go seek with him, loved to hide in the little half bath. In my parents' house, there's a little half bath, and there's the sink. As you walk into the door, the sink is immediately to your left. You just walk in, or it's just right there. And he would stand on the sink, a big, hulking, 6'1" man, and he would then lean over the doorway like so. See, you could not see him as you came in. I felt like I was one of the victims in a horror movie because as you go in, no problem, you turn around, look up, and he'd go, and you'd go change your pants. You know, my sister Mary, or Emily, she is a tremendous player. She was growing up. In fact, she would go and she would hide. She'd get so bored waiting for someone to find her, she would fall asleep. And then we couldn't find her for hours. I remember mom calling neighbors and friends. I mean, she had the watch party out because she hid so well. And the fact is, people have been hiding for a long time. From earliest times until now, people have been hiding. And then there are others of us who may not be hiding. We're just kind of, we just don't know where we are. And so Jesus tells a story. He doesn't just tell one, he tells three stories because the fact is, and you know this if you're a parent, rarely can you tell someone something once and them get it. And Jesus, the master storyteller, says, I want you to get the point. So I'm going to give it to you three times. It's called the story of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. It's found in Luke chapter 15. If you have your Bible, I invite you to turn there with me. We're going to be hitting some of the high points this morning. As you turn to Luke 15, I want to give you sort of the setup to what's going on here. You see, Luke says, here's what's going on. Here's why Jesus gave this particular series of teachings. You see, there are lots of people, specifically sinners and tax collectors, coming to listen to Jesus. Now, there are two ways that a preacher can get in trouble, and you know this, don't you? Number one, a preacher gets in trouble for not growing a church. Number two, a preacher gets in trouble for growing a church. Because new people means someone's going to sit in my pew, in my seat. You see that seat right there? It has that wonderful shape because I have sat there for 25 years. And new people means I lose my seat. Things are going to change. Not the way I like it. And so Jesus begins to tell this series of stories to a group of people, to the Pharisees and scribes, to say, listen, there is something I want you to hear about God's heart, not only for the lost, but the newly found. So he tells a story about a sheep, a coin, and a son. Now, this first one, the sheep, it's sort of a typical story. There's a man, we're told, and he has 100 sheep. Not a bad number. And like any good shepherd, at the end of the day, he comes back and he counts his sheep. 96, 97, 98, 99. Where's Fluffy? Fluffy's missing. So he does what any good shepherd does. Let's count again. 96, 97, 98, 99. I'm missing a sheep. And so Jesus says he leaves the 99 found sheep and goes in search of the one lost sheep. And when he finds the one lost sheep, he is so overjoyed, he carries the sheep on his shoulders back. Because hear me now, family, when God brings you home, he brings you home. He carries the sheep back and then he calls all of his friends and his neighbors and he says these words, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. I tell you, that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And Jesus tells a story about a woman who lost a coin. Now I know, as soon as you hear that, you think, great, what's the big deal? She lost some spare change. You and I intentionally lose spare change, don't we? You got it everywhere. You got it in your pockets. You got it in your car seat. You got it in your couch. You've got it all over the place. And frankly, you've got more than you really want to mess with, because who wants to carry it around? So what's the big deal in losing a coin? Now, the thing you need to remember is back in their day, they did not have banks in the way that you and I might think of a bank. So, because there were not the same systems in place, people did not just carry around money wherever they went. Most people tended to own solid goods that they could barter or sell. So, for instance, you'd have sheep or clothes or grain, things of that sort. And if you want something, you'd give some of yours and you'd take some of theirs, and that's sort of how it worked. You didn't see many people carrying around gold bars with them. But we're told this woman had 10 gold coins. These 10 coins were a big deal to her because they were not simply her savings, they were her dowry. See, what would happen is her father most likely would say, "Honey, this is what I am willing to pay for you, so that one day when a young man wants to take your hand in marriage, I will give this to him as the dowry of what you are worth." So he receives that as a part of the wedding gift. And so she, as a woman who is very much like all people interested in her value, would probably have carried these 10 gold coins around her neck on a necklace. And one of them falls off. One of them gets lost. So you see, it's not simply that she lost some money. This dowry was a statement of her value. She's lost a piece of herself. She's lost some of who she is, what people think of her, who her daddy says she is. And so she looks and she looks. And finally, after scouring the house, turning everything upside down, we're told once again, go to the next slide here. It says, "Rejoice with me." You'll notice a phrase here. It repeats, "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost coin." And in the same way, I tell you, Jesus says, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. So then Jesus tells one more story. Story of a lost son. Now, this story is so familiar, I don't even have to tell it to you. You could do it for me. In fact, we typically call this the story called the what? The prodigal son. Although a more accurate title would probably be the father of two sons. Because the passage begins, "There was once a father who had two sons." You see, the story is about the father. It's not about the one who's lost. And so the son, the younger son, comes to the daddy one day and says, "Dad, I want my share of the inheritance." Now again, you need to understand, you did not get your inheritance until the daddy died. This boy is not simply saying, "I'd like an advance." He's actually saying, "It would be better for you to be dead because I want your stuff more than I want you, Dad." And the dad tries to talk him out of it. The son won't hear of it. So the father gives him his share of the inheritance. And this boy, like all young men who have too much money and too much time on their hands, goes out and blows it all. Now, we don't really know what he spent his money on. Although there is a little point there where the older brother says to his father, "Dad, this no good son of yours, all he did is spend your money on loose living women." That doesn't actually say that's what he did. So we don't know that that is what the younger son did. But we do now know and have an insight into what the older brother would have done had he been in that situation. And so this boy, this son, he goes and he ends up in, we're told, a far country. And he starts to live it up. And as you know, when you have money, you have friends. But when you don't have money, you don't have friends. And so the money is there. People are happy to be his entourage. This is Hollywood at its golden age. And then as soon as his money's gone, his friends leave and he is hungry. He becomes so desperate, he finds his way to a pagan farmer's farm. And he hires himself out to feed pigs. Now get this now, a good Jewish boy who is not to handle or eat pork is now feeding pigs. This is the lowest of the low. This is the worst of the worst, the dirtiest of the dirty. And this is what he's doing. Now you know what this is like. You can be in a really bad situation, but you can always sort of look and say, "Well, at least I'm not in that situation." Well, this is that situation. Until he gets to that point of desperation. He's so hungry, he looks at the food the pigs are eating and says that he wanted what they ate. Now, this is kind of gross. Do I have any country boys at the Antioch Church of Christ? Anyone in here? Wayne back there? Any of you ever have to mess with feeding pigs? Anyone? Yeah, a few of you here. Now, you know how this works, right? Let me clue you in if you grew up in the suburbs. What you do, if you're going to feed a pig, is you get your family garbage. You put it out back in the bin, and then you let it sit there a while, get nice and ripe. All right? And once the smell starts to be more than you can bear, it's now the point where the pigs are going, oh yeah. So you give it to the pigs, and they will eat it up because they want that oomph to it. And by the way, just think about that. Next time you order a hot dog, okay? But they want it to be a little ripe, a little tinge to it. And this is the place that younger son finds himself, that he's so hungry he would eat that. And so there's this beautiful little phrase, and I love the way the King James put it. It says, he came to himself. Don't you love that? He came to himself. It's like he realized, I lost myself. I put me somewhere, but I can't find me anymore. He came to himself and he realizes that I know what I'll do. I'll go back home because my daddy treats his servants better than this guy is treating me. So if I'm going to work in a field, I'd rather work in my daddy's field. And so he prepares the speech. You know the speech, don't you? It's one that you prepare when you're about to eat crow for something you did. Maybe it's that speech you're going to have with your parents as to why you were out past curfew. And you're thinking of every possible reason why you're out past curfew. Lord, we were just in this prayer meeting. I mean, Mom and Dad, we were in this prayer meeting, and it just kind of, it went long, and you know, and Bobby, he had a demon in him, and we had to like cast out the demon, and it just, you know, the speech, right? It's that speech that you try and are prepared to give to the police officer when he pulls you over. Well, we've all had it. And so the boy begins to prepare the speech. Dad, if you just let me be a part of your workforce, I'll come home. Would you let me just come home? I just want to come home. So he starts to go home. And then we have this beautiful little phrase in here that is often just, I don't know that we can get enough out of it. But it says that Jesus tells us while the son was still a long way off, the father saw his boy. It's one of those beautiful pictures where the dad is looking day after day just for the moment when a figure will come over the horizon. And moms, dads, you know what it's like. You know how your children walk, don't you? You know that goofy little jaunt they have? You know the height and their build. You know how they look. You can see your children even before your eyes really can see your children. And there's this daddy who's watching for his son to come home day after day. And it says, while he was watching there in the far distance, before his boy could even get the words on his lips, his daddy runs for him. Now I know when we hear that, we all go, isn't that cute? And a lot of us automatically, because we are so inundated with Hollywood TV, with the big cinematic moments, as soon as we see this and hear this, we envision that scene. Two people, long stretch, running towards each other. Music is going, da 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 da, you know, and they're coming together. Hair's flowing. Maybe it's in slow motion. They soft focus the faces. You know what I'm talking about? And so that is what we see. That's not what is going on here. There's nothing cute about this. Because what you need to understand, this man was a Bedouin. This father was a Bedouin. He was a respected man of the community, and a Bedouin would wear robe. That's just what they wore. They would wear robes, and so too, if you wanted to run, well, it created some difficulties. In fact, you wouldn't run. Two reasons. Number one, well, it's just too blooming hot out there to run. You got to save your energy, save your strength. You kind of pace yourself through the day. But two, if you want to run, you got to hike up that skirt. And if you want to run real fast, you hike it up a little more. And let me just be real frank with you. This was before the day of Fruit of the Loom. Okay? Now I'm just being real with you here. This daddy, though, it was undignified, it was uncool, he exposed himself to shame, he shames himself for his son. And he runs. Before his eyes can even focus on who this is, he runs, and without thinking, he hikes up his robe and he runs towards his son. And the boy, as his daddy gets closer, he begins and he's about to speak, "Dad, if you'll just let me," but the dad doesn't even let him get a word out. He grabs him, he kisses his face, his neck, his forehead, and he says, "Quick, bring sandals." And he puts sandals on his feet. "Quick, put a robe on his back." And they put a robe on his back. "Quick, put the ring on his finger, the family seal that says you are a part of this family." And then he says, "Let's throw a party." In fact, it's the same phrase we see once again. He says, "Rejoice." And he celebrates. And there's this party for this son of mine, verse 24, was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Now, here's the interesting thing. This is quite the celebration because the older son, you remember where he is, right? Where's the older boy right now? He's out in the field. He's working. As he comes home, he doesn't just hear about a party. He actually hears the party. In fact, interesting little thing we're told. We're told that he hears the sound of music and dancing. Now, I've heard music before, and it doesn't take very loud music to hear it. But when was the last time you were at a party that was so rambunctious that you could hear the sound of dancing? This is the party scene going on for this younger brother. And the older brother is ticked. And he refuses to go inside. In fact, you remember he says to his dad, he says, "Dad, this ain't fair. I've been here. I never left. I do the right things all the time for you. And you don't give me anything for it." And he's just mad. After all, what did this good-for-nothing so-and-so son of yours ever do for you? By the way, isn't it interesting? He even says to his dad, he says, "This son of yours." And in a moment, the daddy will say, "This brother of yours." Understand that it is not simply there is a lost person out there that is important to God. There are lost people out there who should be important to you and me, family. "This brother of yours." And the daddy comes out because the father, even when the older brother is mad, the father goes to him. See, listen, folks. This older brother was just as lost as the younger brother, and he never left home. Being lost has nothing to do with geography. It has everything to do with relationship. Which means I can come in here week in and week out and yet have no relationship with God. But the Father will come even to those who are close physically but far spiritually. And he says to him, "My son, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Lost. That'd be great title of a TV show, don't you think? Lost. Have you ever been lost? Have you ever been somewhere and you thought you knew where you're going, but on your way you kind of get sidetracked, got turned around, and then you get there and you go, "I don't know where I am." Lost. And then you're so lost, the more you try to get unlost, the more loster you get until you can't find your way out of being lost anymore. Lost. There's this picture that he gives over and over again of being lost. And so what happens, you're driving somewhere to visit that friend for lunch. But you lose your way, you get lost. And so you call this helpful friend of yours and what you say, "I'm lost." And what does this helpful friend say to you? "Well, where are you? If I knew that, I wouldn't be lost." But then he begins to say, "Show me the signs. So what do you see around you? You describe it." And he says, "You wait there. I will come to you." Lost. And this word is so important that Jesus doesn't simply say a story about it once or twice, but three different times. And did you notice how each story has a different cause for the item being lost? The coin. Wasn't the coin's fault for being lost? The coin did not choose to play hide and go seek one day and say, I'm not going to tell anyone where I'm going. No, the coin was dropped, it was discarded, something happened, and it was lost. It wasn't the coin's fault. And I know some of you this morning are in that state. You look around and you say, I'm not where I want to be. And when you kind of trace things backward, it's not really your fault. It's where you grew up. It's the situation you found yourself in. It's a traumatic event. It's something that happened to you, and now you are in this place you never wanted to find yourself. It may not be your fault, but you're still lost. The sheep? The sheep didn't mean to get lost. He just kind of got sidetracked, right? Sort of that one with ADHD problem. Oh, look, squirrel, right? One day he's out with all of his 99 other buddies having a great day when all of a sudden he looks over and he goes, ooh, shiny blinky thing. And the little sheep prances over there to see what it is. And as he goes a little further, he's like, hey guys, come see this. And he keeps following the shiny blinky thing until when the shepherd calls dinner time, the sheep can't hear him. So now the sheep is lost, doesn't know where to go, doesn't know how to find his way home. And so he didn't mean to. And you know what it's like? You can be so distracted, so busy that you forget where you are and what you're supposed to be about. It may not be your fault, but you're still lost. You may just be distracted. You may not have meant to, but you're still lost. The son? Oh yeah, it was the son's fault for getting lost. He knew what he was doing. He chose to go in a direction that was against everything he'd ever been taught. And he thought he knew the way back home, but as soon as he started going, he got lost. And the further he went, the darker it got. Folks, listen to me. Sin will take you farther than you want to go and keep you there longer than you ever thought. And he walks around, he says, where do I go? How do I get home? Until he's at the worst possible point. And finally, it's not until that he says, I gotta find my way home. Now notice this little interesting nugget. While he turned his face towards the house, it was only the father who could bring him in. Lost. And I know right now some of us are beginning to think about that moment, that place, that time, that thing we've done, and we go, I don't know how I can get back home because I have done so much. You're thinking about a relationship. You're thinking about all those words that, boy, you wish for the world you could take back. You're thinking about that indiscretion. You're thinking about those little moments of compromises along the way with your finances. You're thinking about the way that you were not quite honest with your boss. You're thinking about those things that have taken you places that you wish for the world you could come back from. And you say, I just want to come home. And so Jesus tells these stories. Now what's really interesting in all this, and Mitchell, if you'll put this up, Jesus basically says, folks, there's only two kinds of people in this world. One, there are those who are lost and those who were lost. And right now, this morning, every one of us is in either one of those categories. Either this morning you are lost. Maybe you didn't mean to get there. Maybe it was because of someone else. Maybe it was a bad choice on your part, but you're lost. And for others of us in here, it's not by our strength or our goodness, but we simply go, yes, I remember I was lost, but then my God found me. You see, it was always about God finding us. In fact, curiously enough here, this is one of those real challenging things, I know. By the way, do you know the first thing you need to do this morning? Very first thing is admit you're lost. And guys, this is hard for us, isn't it? Men? Yeah? I heard a woman once make the joke. She said, you know why the children of Israel wandered for 40 years in the desert? Because Moses went ask for directions. Or ladies, you know you're driving with your husband or your boyfriend and you know he's lost, but he looks over at you and goes, oh, baby, oh, baby, I'm just going a scenic route, right? This is hard for us. This morning, one of the most courageous things that some of you can do is to simply say, not out loud, but to yourself, say, God, I'm lost. I know I'm lost. I know I want to come home, but I'm lost. You have to admit your loss. Now, the second thing is this. Survival experts will tell us the most important thing you can do when you realize you're lost is stay where you are. Stay with the wreckage. Don't try to unlose yourself because you're the one who got yourself lost in the first place. Hunker down. Find some food. Find some water. Stay there because if you're out like hiking the Appalachian Trail, they are going to come into the place where you last called in. They're vectoring your spot. They are mapping your place and they will find you. Stay where you are. Don't try to unlose you. And here's the fact. Some of us this morning, because of pride or ego, are unwilling to admit we're lost. And then we think we can find our way back out of the mess we found ourselves in. Folks, we will only make it worse trying to fix it on our own. We're the ones who got ourselves in this mess to begin with. You wait for Jesus to come. You notice the story is not about the coin that miraculously found himself. It's not about the sheep that somehow found his way home. It is about the woman who looks for the coin, the shepherd who finds the sheep, the daddy who watches for the son and runs towards him. It is about what God does for us. We got to admit we're lost, family. And we got to be a safe place for others who need to admit they're lost too. See, one of the things that makes a church a place that is safe for all is when all people are able to say, I'm not okay. And for us to say, it's okay to not be okay. We love you too much to let you stay that way, though. And so we got to admit this, family. This has got to be a place where masks come off, where truth is revealed, and where those of us who are hearing the stories for the first time do not look with disapproval, but rather look with a sense of, I know what it's like, come on home. Because there are people who need to come home. And there's a daddy God who's simply saying, come, I wait for you. It is time for you to come home. And I know that that scares some of us to death, the idea of being honest about things. Because I've just told you, you're lost and now Jesus is looking for you and you are scared about that meeting. You don't know how he's going to respond. You're afraid that the only reason he wants to see you is to have the talk. To let you know how bad you were and what you did wrong. I remember years ago when I was in high school, I went with this youth group on one of the Mexico mission trips. And this particular year, if you went on any of those trips, you know you'd get up around 3, 4 a.m. You'd be there waiting for your flight. And this was before 9/11, so we'd all be out at the gate. It was a great time. But this particular year, I forgot my passport at home. Now, even back then, you didn't get into Mexico, or better yet, out of Mexico without a passport. And I'm realizing this as we're about to board the plane. So I tell Dad, Dad, I forgot my passport. Dad jumps in the car, breaks the sound barrier getting home and back. They hold the airplane because of me. And finally, I'm sitting there talking to friends, not thinking much about anything, when the stewardess comes down, hands me my passport, says, you're Josh. I said, yes. She goes, here's your passport. Oh, and your father wanted me to give you a message. He says, I will deal with you when you get back. I didn't want the trip to ever end. And some of you are thinking that's what God is about to do to you. He's ready to say, I will deal with you when you get back home. And you see the look on his face and you're scared. But folks, the look on Jesus' face is not anger. It's desperation that you'd come home. So here's the good news. There are those who are lost and those who were lost. But there is a Jesus who is right now looking for you. He's finding people who are lost. And he's saying, if you will simply turn to me, I will bring you home.